What you are about to hear on the Little Red Barn podcast is an informal discussion around topics in agriculture that are common in today's landscape. Any talk about individual companies or ideas or issues is purely a reflection of what we are hearing in our own community on any given day, all across this great countryside of ours. What that generally means is what we say doesn't have to be taken as the absolute gospel truth. As with anything, research, figure it out yourselves. And then if we're wrong, come back and tell us. If you would like to be a guest on the Little Red Barn podcast, please reach out and we will work you in. We don't want to shy away from any differing opinions or anything that makes news or is noteworthy in agriculture. But we reiterate, the Little Red Barn is informal for information and discussion purposes only, and maybe a little bit of entertainment. With that in mind, let's get started. Here's the next episode of the Little Red Barn. In this episode of the Little Red Barn podcast, we're going to take a little bit of a history lesson as we discuss the big boy train passage, the biggest steam locomotive still in service. Honestly, Charlie, I think it might have been the biggest one that was in service ever, but it's still in service. Big boy, the UP 4101.
Let's hear the whistle.
Yep, tracked through northern Indiana. So we're going to talk history a little bit. It was a great, I actually partook in watching Big Boy come by just 2 miles north of my farm here, drove right up. There was a crossing right there. But we also want to talk this past week in the markets. Dear heavens, there was some roller coaster ride action there. We're going to talk this coming week in the weather. Dear heavens, there's going to be some roller coaster action there. And we're going to talk, yep, there's a video making the rounds on the old social interwebs that I think I want to touch base on just a little bit as well. So multiple things in this week. But, Charlie, let's start first with you. Did Huion Grain finish up planting this past week?
The report is we are done with our initial planting. We went through and replanted a bunch of acres on soybeans already, spots that we knew that we were going to have issues with, and just came back in. And
what about that spot that suffered catastrophic loss of biomass that the satellite imagery told you about?
Absolutely. That had on my phone come up, and a red alert, you're going and losing biomass, huge biomass.
You killed it all.
We killed off the field. And I looked at it a little bit closer, and I'm like, I'm all panicky. My hands are shaking, and I quickly drop what I'm doing with this text alert and start digging through my imagery on field view. Yep, that burn down worked very well on the cover crop.
Ah, cover crop. Cover crop losing biomass, so, not actual growing crop.
Not actual growing crop, so I felt a little relieved when I found out that, yeah. Hey, oh, that's my cover crop dying down, not the soybeans that were coming up.
It was a planned loss of biomass. So, well, good. Well, I'm happy to report here, Blue Bottle Farms planting also is done. Now, I will not use the word completed, Charlie. I'm using the word done because we were within a couple of acres of getting over the ground that we planned on getting over. And honestly, before I get into that, I was walking the field the day before I started out there just to make sure it was good. When you farm muck, I never like to go into it blind. I usually like to walk over and just see if there's any spot I
should
stay away from. Yes, I am buck 100%, especially when I'm using borrowed equipment. I'm using a borrowed tractor.
Oh, come on. That was a big tractor.
It's bad enough if I bury my own tractor. I don't want to bury somebody else's. So I walked out over the field, and I think I might have found one of the reasons why one of these areas has been more trouble recently. Charlie, you have experience with tile, right?
Right.
Both putting it in and, you know, maintaining, correct?
Maintaining and tearing it out.
So have you ever seen, or is it possible for a tile to lift. And when I say lift, I found a spot in my field, Charlie, that I swear there is, and I haven't taken a shovel and dug horizontally to see, but I swear I have a ribbon of 8-inch tile, maybe it's 6, but I think it's 8, that bubbles up out of the ground like an inchworm and back down. What would cause tile to heave like that, and especially unless it was in a super shallow tile to start with, but what would, because that's one of the things I found, and it's right at the edge of an area that starts to be very wet.
One of the things that I found over the years is either some of these old folks had a lot of energy, apparently, and they've actually hand dug some of these tiles in. So it's easy to put a hump in the tile if you're hand digging a tile, obviously, across the field. And just the thought that somebody hand dug these tile in, just
yeah,
amazing.
I can't believe that, because I know the group that actually put these tile lines are supposedly in, and I know it wouldn't have been hand dug. If they were plowed in at a depth of, well, shoot, even 3 feet. Let's go with a shallow tile. Let's say it was at 3 feet deep. That's a heck of a lot of heave for me to see it at the surface now.
Right, that is. And there could have been something where the tile plow came up and came back down. Some of the computer-aided stuff could have done that easily.
I was hoping you'd say groundhog, because then I'd go out there and I'd just, you know, wait and shoot the heck out of...
Shoot the heck out of the groundhog?
Greg Groundhog.
Another thing could be somebody could have hooked it with a ripper or chisel plow or something and drove that tile up and out of the ground. I've seen that before. Done it myself.
Experience talking. Yep. It's just interesting. I walked out there. I found that. So we're going to go. That's in an area that I didn't plant anyway. So as the summer goes on, when I go out there and try and maintain that area, spraying, mowing, and things like that to keep the weeds under control, I'm probably going to take a shovel with me and dig a little bit more.
Now, I've also seen where in muck, especially in muck, where as the muck dries down, it actually shrinks, compacts, and goes down.
Yeah, well, and I would expect that you're saying the muck around the tile may have settled, and so it's brought it to the surface. That would be interesting, and that could be.
We have some muck holes that have literally been, that I was told from my grandfather, that was level with the road. And now you look at the fields, there's so much moisture that was taken out of the muck soils that it actually sunk the whole field 3 feet over the years.
Holy cow, that's crazy.
So,
and that's because you pump the tile systems. You're pumping moisture out, or it's just the tile systems themselves moving?
The tile themselves actually just... And there's some people out there that put in tiles say that, well, just after so many years, you just got to replace your tile muck because it will work itself up and... Or the muck will settle some more, and as you pull the moisture out and start breaking down, and
yeah, it's going to be interesting. I have a company that's agreed to come out and take a look and look at either redoing, or in my case, I told them to finish the tile system because I only have, I think, 6 or 7 fingers across the field, and I want to end up pattern tiling it. I think when they came in and did it before, they just put in quote trouble spots, and I just want to pattern tile the whole field. But anyway, it was interesting. I was walking out there, found that and found the spot, and then went back at it, and we were finishing out. So I was trying to finish the area around the wet hole that I decided not to try and drive into, and planter broke.
You tore your planter in two.
Not quite in two, but it's going to have to be torn in two to fix. So this Kinsey planter that I've been fiddling with here for a couple of years it's a homemade job, not my homemade doing, but it does a great job. It does a great job planting as long as I can get it dialed in right, but it is heavy, and it's especially heavy on the back. We've got 4 rows up front and 7 rows hanging off the back of the second one. And I think what happened is this planter, as I got to looking underneath, that single pivot point, it's a single hydraulic ram, single point of twist, of torque, to lower all 4 wheels and lift that planter up. That is a 4-inch round steel pipe-ish bar. And it really looked to me like it just ripped and tore multiple places, radial fractures all the way around. So the planter still plants just fine. I planted from the back of the field where the breakdown happened all the way to the front. dropping seed in the ground as I went. But you can push that hydraulic lever and that planter does not lift. And so I have to not tear it apart or tear it in half, but I actually have to tear the tongue and everything off to cut out this section and then take it over to our friends at Craig Welding and have them weld me a new replacement that's beefed up and can handle the torque of that center as we lift it. So,
you know, Ryan, when I first started coming back from the farm from Purdue, we had a 12-row planter, and the thing broke right in half as we were planting one day.
Yeah.
We retired the planter.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to retire the planter.
Well, if I retire the planter, that means I have to buy another planter, Charlie. And, you know, I know that you are made of money, and it's nothing for you to go out and just drop a dime and get a new planter, but I got to make this one work. And I think the repair costs on this, honestly, and that's I've done the math. I think the repair costs on this for a five-foot section of steel tube reinforced with the welder guy, because this planter was working great. I think it was just tired and gave up the ghost and maybe had some stress in there before.
But you were talking about this planter doesn't even have a monitor, so you can't tell how much you're dropping either.
Well, but I don't have a place to put a monitor.
You got a fender. You got this brand new cab that you're putting on your machine.
But how do those things work? They flash lights at you, and it's more money to get something set up like that.
These modern planters have things in them that actually read. They're like laser eyes.
Correct.
That can see
and,
these
And you know what I'm hearing from you as you describe all these things? Because I know about these things. And you list them off to me, and I hear cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And my farm bank account, no cha-ching.
Yeah, but we need to get Rich in here to help you out.
No cha-ching.
Now, you know, Rich could build you a planter.
Yes, and Rich would also say cha-ching. Because we talked about that. Rich looked at my meters, and Rich was a great guy and told me, hey, no cha-ching on these. They're working just fine. So, yeah, we're just, we've got, it's always something. And somebody posted on the old Facebook page when I talked about this. It's always something. It's never easy. But we don't know what we've got out there. We're going to wait and see when it comes up. We'll see what happens. I believe all row units were working, but how long one of them was working, I don't know. There may be some skips. We will see what happens.
I think it's time for a retirement party.
For what?
For the planter.
For the planter? You get me a new planter? You get me. Look, I'll do this. I will trade two planters. I'll trade that one and the other one that I have downstairs in Bay 1. I will trade those two planters for one.
There we go.
Okay, I will trade those two planters for one that it does need to be able to do both corn and beans.
There we go.
And if you figure that out for no money out of my pocket, Charlie, you will do the deal.
How much is scrap worth?
Hey, yeah, I'm just saying, you do the deal. I will do the deal if you can get it done for no money out of my pocket.
We'll have to talk to Rich again.
I'm just saying, you get it done with no money out of my pocket, I will figure it out.
We get a small Kinsey 6-row with a split in it. I think you'll be good.
No, I'd be very happy with that. But the key, no extra money. No money out of pocket. I'll let you have the white 5100. That is a great planter. I just need to get those clutches rebuilt. And I finally found a guy that's a listener to the podcast. Says, I can help you with that. I know how to do that. So get those clutches rebuilt. That was a good planter. I'd trade it for one that works.
There we go.
But you got to do the work. I'm tired of doing work. I'm tired of doing work. It's always something. So anyway, I'm done. Not completed, but I'm done. I may have to come over and get your little 2-row sweet corn planter and go out there and bebop around a little bit and throw some stuff in with that.
Throw a little bit more in?
Yeah, I could put that on the back of the Coyote and get some stuff done.
I thought about using it myself because we got some long skips that...
Long skips?
That... I'm looking at going like, you know, if I just drop some seed in there, that make it look better.
Look
anyway
better, yeah.
From the pickup drive.
So speaking of looking better, did you watch the markets at all this week?
Well, I was trying to avoid depression, and I noticed that we were in free fall. And then I started, you know, thinking that I need to hit the margaritas a little bit harder.
So, Charlie taking the head-in-the-sand approach this week, and that's understandable. I know a lot of folks that did the same thing. But it was interesting this week to see. Look, in my mind, Charlie, it was interesting, but not necessarily unexpected to see what we saw last week. Let's start from just the overall technical side of things. If you go back to Memorial Day, or just after Memorial Day, you look at the Commitment of Traders report that week. Managed money was long in a big, big, big way, both corn and beans.
Where do you find these reports at?
Well, the Commitment of Traders report comes out every week. It's part of one of the reports that USDA goes out. So you can get USDA.gov or Google Commitment of Traders report, and you'll either get the actual report, or more than likely, if you Google it, you'll get somebody's analysis of it. And you just got to make sure that you're seeing the one week on week. But the Commitment of Traders basically says where all the positions are, who holds them. Is it funds that or commercials? Is it anywhere, everywhere? And basically what it tells you is where is capital being deployed in the marketplace? And so if we have funds heavy in the market, Charlie, that is speculative money. That's money that people mm-hmm. are deploying through any different kind of funds, whether it's probably not an ETF, but you get the idea. You're speculating. And so funds will go long if they think the price is going to go higher. And over the course of the spring, we saw a lot of longs come into the market. Why would longs come into the market here this past spring?
Our favorite company, China.
China, yes, exactly. News came out that China was doing this, that, and the other thing. Expectations were that they might do more. So the funds went long, corn and beans. But what was really interesting and what came to light in the Commitment of Traders report when a couple of lights clicked on and people really started to pay attention to the analysis, when you look at this year versus last year, the length on the part of the funds was incredibly bigger this year than it was last year at this time. The crop is in the ground. By all practical purposes, the crop's doing fairly well, although I will admit that the first crop progress report, crop condition score on corn, was the third worst in the last 10 years at 67% good to excellent. So the crop's not as good as maybe in past years, but the crop is in the ground, it's growing, it's up. And there was an expectation that at some point these funds are probably going to have to liquidate and get back to more of an even position. This past week that started. But then the bigger thing, I think, in this marketplace, and this is where we're going to have a little bit of primer on tariffs, because a lot of different tariff equations came into the marketplace at midweek. The market, I think it was Thursday. It was either Wednesday or Thursday. Soybeans had a 30-cent sell-off. Corn was like 10, 11, 12 cents lower.
There were some big sell-offs
there. It was a nasty, nasty day. And on that day, all of a sudden, traders were starting to wonder about, will China continue in their commitment on 25 million metric tons for this upcoming crop year? So what we're going to harvest here this fall into next year, 26, 27, everything points to that. But what happened this week was the Trump administration instituted what's called Section 301 tariffs to replace the Section 122 tariffs. All right. Do you know what any of those are?
No.
All right. So this is where the learning comes. Little Red Barn learning process. This could be another segment we sponsor weekly. Learn with a Little Red Barn. Learn with Ryan and Charlie. All right. Let's start with Section 122 tariffs. These are the ones that President Trump put on back, what was it? It was right around the turn
of
the year.
A couple
of
years ago.
No, it was around the turn of the year, January, early February. Because they are supposed to expire here in July of 2026. Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974 authorizes a temporary 150-day import surcharge of up to 15% to address serious, quote, here's the bunny ears, Charlie, balance of payment issues. So this is what Trump put on. It was a 10% tariff that went into effect February 24th. And they went into effect on China just to cover anything because he could.
Because we can.
10%. They were supposed to end in July. And I believe, well, I'm not sure whether these Section 122 tariffs on China were part of the whole Supreme Court decision a little while back that said you can't do that.
I can see where that would come into play.
But if it, even if it was, still, they pulled those off and replaced them here this past week with Section 301 tariffs. And Charlie, I know you're asking, well, Ryan, what are Section 301 tariffs? I'm glad you asked, sir. Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, same Trade Act, it allows the U.S. Trade Representative's Office to investigate and retaliate against foreign government policies or practices that are deemed A, unjustifiable, or B, unreasonable, or C, discriminatory, and burden U.S. commerce. So we used Section 301 this last week to institute new tariffs against China. And because of all of that rigmarole, all of a sudden then traders were like, you know,
are we going to keep buying beans from the U.S.?
What's keeping China from saying, screw you?
Our beans are better than Brazil's.
But are they? We don't know anymore, you know, because Brazil beans are cheap. But basically what was talking here is the traders were worried, you know, trade was worried that maybe this pushes the China deal off a little bit. USDA Trade Ambassador Greer said that China was consulted a long time ago on the proposed tariffs. I don't know if I buy that, Charlie.
I doubt it.
But they said that, you know, they're going to honor the deal. Time will tell. But after that, you saw the market hit a certain level. And once you passed a certain level, the door is open to a complete reset of this market, probably all the way down into the lower 11s and upper 10s, at least on soybeans. And corn's going to follow suit as well. 440 could easily be in play here on the new crop corn as we go forward in the weeks ahead, just because of the technical ideas on the charts currently. So that brings me to a question. Video circulating on the old interwebs talked about Trump's Wisconsin farmer meeting. Again, I'll use bunny ears. Farmer meeting called out, you know, inaction, called out fertilizer prices, called out the farmers at that meeting being million-dollar, multi-million-dollar farmers and no real farmers. We're going to push all that aside and just say, I'm going to ask you the question, Charlie. Is the president starting to lose support of those in agriculture?
I would say, in my personal opinion, he's starting to lose support. And a lot of it's going to be just seems to be a lot of not paying attention to the economics of the ag industry. We go and close off a port, increase fertilizer costs, we're increasing costs.
But he didn't do that. The Iranians did it.
Something happened there that caused that Iranians to close off the strait. But even when you look at tractor supply parts, they're up quite a bit. Right. I go in and talk to my local auto parts store, and he goes, you know, Charlie, I want to keep my prices low, but my prices are starting to creep up because of fuel prices. I go and make deliveries out to different people. That costs me money. It costs me money to bring in parts. It costs me, my parts cost me more because they come from China. Well, so there's a number of different things there that all of a sudden we're starting to see our pricing on everything just go up.
But how can we tie those price increases? Because I agree with you. Prices are up. Prices are up around everything, Charlie. Buying food for a family of four is ridiculous right now, what things that cost in the grocery store. But I've always struggled with the arguments because we hear them all the time, especially when it comes to election time. And maybe that's part of the reason why prices are getting a little bit more under the microscope as well. Midterm elections are coming up. And it really feels like the current status quo, the current setup, is about to get slaughtered in the midterm elections. But prices come up. You hear people talk about gas prices, food prices, and all the economic pressures when it's time for an election. But Charlie, last time I checked, 80 to 90% of the time, economics run to their own set of rules and politics runs to another. There's policy that interacts sometimes, but economics, the economic cycle, is its own entity, irregardless of what happens over here, isn't it?
Well, your policies, your political policies are going to dictate what the economics are going to do to some degree. If you cut off oil supply and you cause oil prices to increase, that's going to increase the fuel demand.
But when we have our own supply here, it again, that's why I think economics work independently of politics. We can be and have been a net exporter of crude in the United States rather than a net importer or user of our own because of the surplus that we have. So your political equation shouldn't necessarily affect the economics here, except that we are now part of a global economy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to point out, is we're looking at global prices. We're not looking at necessarily just inside the U.S. anymore. We're looking at it from a global perspective. And we got to remember that in our policies sometimes cause oil prices to increase.
Yeah. But if it's a global issue, though, again, doesn't that argue against everybody being ticked off at our own political system? Because, look, you cannot tell me, and I guess this is what I'm getting at, you cannot tell me that if we get immediate bloodbath change in the midterms, to be clear, the top-level administration won't change, but when you get to the legislative branch, if there is a bloodbath change come November, you cannot tell me that getting two completely different sets of people in and running both chambers of Congress changes anything economically in this country.
No, it won't, because you're not going to change the policies. Trump already came out and said that, okay, if we lose the midterm elections, we're just going to turn to executive orders to do this stuff, and they're going to keep right on going.
But yet at the same time, if we then change administration 2 years down the line farther,
everything could be reversed.
No, it will not. I guarantee you it will not be reversed. The prices that we have, the prices that we have for energy right now are here to stay. Your fertilizer prices are here to stay. Maybe they're not $900 a ton for nitrogen, but I guarantee you we don't get below $700 anytime soon.
But Ryan, aren't they going to look at the monopolies of the fertilizer business?
Why now? And what's that going to do? If you force a monopoly to change and go somewhere else, you're forcing somebody else to come in and try and do what that company had done by reason of efficiencies, and you're going to get somebody else into the marketplace that is not nearly as efficient. You're going to end up creating more loss of supply by breaking up the big guy and making somebody else that doesn't know how to run it do it.
But at least they'll break it up and they'll be more price competitive.
But nothing how can there. You be more price competitive if you're taking supply away because you shut somebody down? It's the small refinery exemption thing all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
The ethanol industry has done a very good job at not consolidating too much. And then when you're small, what do? Whine and complain, oh, we can't follow this, and they get their exemption. So what's that do to farmers? Nothing. It doesn't help us at all.
Yeah, but didn't they take those exemptions away?
No, they did not take them away.
I thought they took them away.
The small refinery exemptions are still allowed. What they haven't decided to do yet, or maybe they did, is try and take the exemptions and give them to somebody else. But they're not making the small refiners do anything. They're continuing to give SREs.
Mm-hmm.
The exemptions still exist and will continue to exist from here forward. So again, the policy here is, I really think that, you know, on one hand, it's the chic thing to do to be pissed off at the administration, pissed off at politics. But economics, I still feel, is its own bandwagon. Yes, it can be influenced some by policy. Well, a prime example. Last time grain prices shot through the roof, 2012. Shoot, we'll even go before that, 2008, when we had the big wheat problem. Okay? Mm-hmm. General Mills cereals. Skyrocketed. Those prices never settled back. Once the money just went into the grocer's pocket. Economics runs at a different thing. And I heard somebody else say it this past week. We have now what this war has proven is Americans can find a way to pay X amount for this, X amount for that. Oh, by gosh, they grumble, but they figured out a way to do it. Prices are never going to go back again. Fertilizer prices are not going down. Seed costs are not going down.
What about this new ammonia plant going in?
Show me when it works, and it won't. And then they'll just charge $900 a ton for their ammonia.
Well, I hope that we don't get that.
Economics would dictate until the American people draw a line in the sand and say, no, I will not buy X. Until the American farmer draws a line in the sand and said, screw you, I'm not going to plant 94 million acres of corn. I'm going to plant 75. I would much rather let my land sit idle than have to pay this. Until we deal with the supply side of the equation with a demand response, these economic numbers are here to stay.
So what you're telling me is that the high fertilizer prices are going to be what's going to slow down the farmer from getting those better yields.
Well, is it? You tell me.
I think it has.
Okay.
I know it has for us anyway.
So you're skimping on fertilizer.
We've looked at different ways to cut back on prices. And like what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think we talked about the micros going back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big chunk of change there.
I was very disappointed I didn't get my micros either. Never was able to get the hold of what's his face.
Well, the biologicals.
Oh, micros, biologicals. It's all weird stuff.
It's all weird stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I agree with you. I think Trump is losing some of the support of the American farmer. However, what will help him in agriculture is the fact that I'm not seeing anybody that can garner farmer support come on the other side of any kind of local, so House of Representatives races in this area or otherwise, definitely not Senate races. So the problem is the U.S. farmer does not like the current administration or is losing faith in the current administration, but there's no one else.
And that's the trouble, and that's shame on Democrats for doing that, too. If they gave a good response and a good effort finding people that understood agriculture, I think that they could give them a good run for their money in these counties.
But, you know who it's been.
But if you sit there and you ignore the farmer, and
right,
then you're not going to get that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at.
We both sat in these at Farm Bureau, where
sure,
we picked which legislator we're going to support.
Yeah.
And we both.
Which, by the way, that's ridiculous.
And we've both seen them when both candidates come in, and one is well prepared and can talk ag with you. And they may not be a true farmer, but mm-hmm, they could actually understand agriculture and where you're coming
from.
They
can be a friend of agriculture.
Right.
Sure.
And then you have the other candidate that comes in. He can just look at him and go like, and listen to him and go like, you don't have a clue what you're talking about here. And you obviously didn't do your homework when you came in to talk to us.
Well, and I think, too, you know, we've kind of thrown the ag lobby under the bus before, and this is where I'm going to probably do it again. I'll go back to my days as a farm broadcaster, you know, when I was on the air dealing with markets, weather, but also ag news. And every week, it seemed, you would get some piece, you'd get some news release from a farm lobby group. And in the United States, we have two significant ones when it comes to just overall agriculture. You've got the conservative.
Here comes Ryan's rant.
Ag lobby. No, actually, I'm not going to rant this time.
Okay.
We don't have a sponsor this week anyway. You've got the conservative side, which is going to be what I'm going to put under Farm Bureau,
mm-hmm,
its side. And then you had the more liberal-leaning farm lobby, the National Farmers Union. Okay, and you'd get news releases from both sides over various issues almost weekly. And I know I'm not in ag media anymore as much in terms of at least doing the news side, But I still, you know, Farm Bureau from time to time will throw something out. I can't tell you the last time I've heard anything out of the National Farmers Union. And I would think at this point in time, if you're trying to prop up or not even prop up, that's a bad word. If you're trying to get more people on the Democratic side to be aware of agriculture and come in, try and take advantage of a political situation where, you know what, the American farmer may not be overjoyed right now with how things have gone under the current administration, but the Farmers Union is largely silent. I don't understand that, Charlie. I don't know if it's kind of like Farm Bureau does, you know, it's not worth doing unless you win. And the National Farmers Union says, well, there's no way we win, so why even try? I just don't know why there's not – why is agriculture just viewed as lip service among politics now?
No, and I've seen it before where we have the strategy of let's be quiet and let things play out before we put our foot in our mouth too.
Okay.
And I've seen that too where –
So maybe they're just hoping that Trump puts his foot so far in his mouth or in another orifice that he can't get it out.
Right.
He does a good job of doing that sometimes, but he also seems to – it doesn't seem to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the midterms are going to be interesting.
It will be. It will be, definitely. I'm just concerned that we're going to go down a path that all of a sudden we have gridlock everywhere and nothing can get done and –
Well, haven't you just described the last 20 years?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, the last time we did not have complete gridlock, I think, was in the first term of W.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
I think the second term of W started gridlock. All two Obama terms were gridlock. And then ever since then, it's not just been gridlock. It's been absolute nastiness on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here we are, again, trying to deal with this economic cycle that is trying to move but is moving in tandem, but it should actually move independently of the other. All right, we beat that horse enough. Let's finish up with history. So you watched the big boy. No, you didn't. Well, you saw videos of big boy coming through.
I saw a big boy. Matthew went down there with his grandparents.
Down where?
To Argus.
Oh, gosh, that was a zoo. I heard there were 3,000 people in Argus.
From what I understand, it sure looked like it.
So
with the pictures. 3,000,
if there were 3,000 people in Argus, that means the population of Argus effectively
tripled
in one afternoon.
Tripled. Yeah, there was cars lying in the streets, and boy, big boy came through there blowing the whistle.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It just made me think, be proud to be a Boilermaker all over again.
Oh, yeah. So, again, I went up.
I need some fire up for this fall.
2 miles up the road to the crossing that it was coming through at here. Went up there about 15 minutes before its scheduled time to come through. And, Charlie, just like everything else, trains do not run on time. So I was up there, and I ended up spending about 90 minutes up there at the crossing, just parked my truck alongside the road. I was the third person there. I ended up talking with some farmers, and this is what I'm going to put out to you. I think we want to get, in an upcoming episode or two, a couple of what I'll call old-timers in here. Because I chatted with some farmers up there, some guys that have been around a long, long time, and I had such a history lesson in that 90 minutes that I was up there. Just chewing the fat with a couple of old-timers. Unrefined, and one guy pulled out a big old pouch of, I think probably Red Man, big old leaf tobacco. It was a great old time chatting with these guys. I learned things about the closest town nearby, which was the town of Claypool, from way back in the day. Things that they had in their bank vault. The fact that there was a bank there, where the old feed mill was, where the lumber company was, how the trains came through before. It was just incredible. And that was history that was not necessarily tied to Big Boy at all.
But it was agriculture history.
It was ag history. And it made me wonder. I kind of came away from there, and I'm hopefully going to be talking with these guys some more. I hope to get a couple of them in the studio here in the next couple of weeks. But I came away, walking away, as like in another... In another 5 years, in another 7 years, that history couldn't be gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not sharing these stories anymore. My stories of history start in an era after that. And if I don't know those stories, and if I, furthermore, it's not enough for me to just know them now. I went home and I told my wife and my boys, like, some of the, a couple of the things that I'd learned. It's like, did you know? Because if we don't share those, even if we hear them and think they're cool, if we don't share that with the next generation, that old-timer history dies with us because we haven't shared it. And Charlie, things, technology is moving so fast. AI this, data center that, AI was going to change how we do this. We're relying so much on technology that we're losing the stories in agriculture.
I think there's a lot to be said there, like the powers of the past, right? And those organizations, how they did things, the steam engines, uh-huh, and how they worked. And those are some amazing machines, how they just worked away. And just the fact that there was mint grown in the Claypool area.
Yep.
And,
and we talked about that. The guy was bound and determined to tell me that bean prices were going to go here, corn prices were going to go here, and we're going to lose ground. You know, land is not going to, it's not sustainable. And we just talked about it. I said, well, why are we growing 94 million acres of corn and 85 million acres of beans? He goes, I don't know. I said, we could clearly have prices do what we need to do to have land around here pencil if we were growing 70 to 75 million acres of each, because that's where the demand is. We're overproducing. I said, then use the remaining 25 million acres to grow something else. This is good dirt, Charlie. You know, you realize anything we put in the ground here
will grow.
Generally will grow. Anything. Now, do we have day length to get certain things to maturity? No, but anything will grow here.
Cotton. We got to get cotton here.
Cotton can grow here. We've got it. My wife has it growing at the Warflaw Biblical Gardens. And it makes it blooms and it puts bolls on. Now, the damn squirrels come and eat it, so you don't get to harvest. But cotton can grow here.
You need your shotgun.
Well, in town, that's hard to do.
I got a dog that could help.
Cotton grows here. Millet can grow here. Safflower seed can grow here.
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes definitely grow here.
Absolutely, up there in Logan.
But that's the thing. Everything that we're used to getting from California can grow here on massive scale. We could grow bell peppers on massive scale. We could grow cabbage and celery at a massive scale. Usually they grow it farther north in Michigan. Why? Because they can't grow corn and beans up there. That doesn't mean we can't grow it down here.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to, but the big thing is, if you grow it, you have to have some place to take it. So processing has to come along for whatever it is. And it was just a great topic of conversation. You know, back in the day, if you were growing mint here or whatever, you could process your small batch mint and then send it where it needed to be. It was a lot of self-processing and self this and that. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I'm not sure that I can produce ethanol on the farm, but the feds would probably call it illegal.
Hey, we had a mint still on our farm.
Uh-huh. So,
just got rid of the boiler not too long ago.
Why? Why'd you get rid of it? That's a piece of history, isn't it?
I would think so, but they just said it was time for it to go.
Huh.
Scrap her out.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So it was
pretty small, too.
It was a big history week, and that's one of the things I came away with. Big Boy was cool. Big Boy is going to be coming back through here a little over a month later. Maybe you can see it in person then. But it really reminded me of how much history there is, not only to this area, but to our industry. History that is in, I think, dire need of telling and is very, very highly risked at being lost here unless we change how we think about things real mm-hmm. quick. And I it would be a shame to lose that history.
It would be. Just look at these old pictures of the downtown areas from the 1800s. Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why every small town was there. It probably had to do with either water or a railroad in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a reason for every small town was an agriculture center, a commerce center that was around agriculture back at the start.
Everybody had a grain elevator.
And used it. Used it well.
And mills and thinking of some of the old small towns up by our area, like Wyatt and Inwood, and they all had a mill. They all had a grain elevator there that they worked out of, and a lot of livestock was in these barns that dotted the countryside.
Yeah. So if you have stories, I guess the takeaway here is if you have stories, share them. If you don't have stories, find somebody to tell you stories. Look, we bring up your dad a lot on this show. A lot of times it's in reference to you being fired for the week or not week from various jobs.
I was only fired twice this week.
That's a new record, isn't it?
I believe so.
Okay. But we do that in jest a lot, but your dad is one that has stories just because of his involvement in the community over the years. I can't ask my dad stories. My grandpa had stories that I got. It wasn't in agriculture, but I found out years after the fact, my grandma and grandpa owned a gas station up in Dunlap, Indiana. My grandparents owned a gas station. I didn't know that. But get stories, get the history, and make sure that's not getting it's just one thing. Make sure you share it. And if your kids and people aren't interested in learning it right now, write it down, dictate it, make an audio file, save that history so that people can get it later. Look, one of the things that really boomed from the late 80s through even now, it's kind of died off a little bit, but it reached its heyday 90s and the early aughts, was genealogy. Tracing the old family tree.
Here we go.
Well, what is it? That's history.
That is history.
That is history. Take it the next step. Start tracing some of this agriculture history.
You know, I looked into some of our history, family history. I thought it was kind of interesting. And then I got a little concerned because as you trace back on our history, we were the first hanging in the New World.
Oh, okay. All right. Fantastic.
That's fantastic news to learn. And we almost blew up the Mayflower.
You were responsible for almost blowing up the Mayflower.
Charlie can get blamed for blowing up the Mayflower.
Well, once again, you're fired because of that.
Yes, I'm going like, and I just look at my dad going like, you know, what did you expect?
Yeah.
I mean, we almost blew up the Mayflower. Yeah. And we got the first hanging in the New World.
Yeah.
And I'm telling my boys this as they were in kindergarten. They thought that I was joking. And I said, no, here's the book to take to your first grade, your kindergarten teacher to read to class today. She wanted to read the story about your relatives.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool stuff. But again, you gotta pass it on. You gotta make sure it goes along. So, we'll end it there. I want to bring you up the fact this podcast again brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance, $3 million worth of real estate and infrastructure financing available on an Express Loan app. You should get a thumbs up or thumbs down on approval within 24 to 48 hours based on 3 years of taxes and a good cash balance sheet. For more information, if you want to buy that next 30, 40, 90 acres, give the Mac America Ag Finance Northern Indiana office a call, 574-253-3433. We didn't talk much about weather at all this week, Charlie, but I want to just let you know, you're going to sweat your ever-loving mind off this coming week.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we're looking at highs 85 to 90, 91. Heat indices, so the humidity is going to be high, which is your favorite subject, high humidity. Heat indices probably upper half of the 90s and pushing triple digits. What I can tell you is, in years past here recently, we've heard grumbling about lack of heat units. We don't have that this year. The corn that has gone in the ground and is up and is emerging definitely is going to soak up these heat units this week. This should get the crop off to a good start, given the rain we had this past weekend.
So what you're telling me is I need to back off on the surfactants this week.
Maybe just a little bit. Maybe
so that
just
we
a
don't
little
burn
bit.
That crop.
Yep.
And then we can.
Yep. And I'm also telling you there's going to be some moisture around to start. We dry down the end of the week and then moisture the next week as well. So that's your brief weather update. We'll talk weather a little bit more in depth next week on the Little Red Barn. But until then, he's Charlie Hooyan. I'm Ryan Martin. And this is the Little Red Barn. This is
we ain't gonna stop.